Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Great to have you with us. Speeding towards the weekend on a Friday Junior, as Dylan likes to call it. Coming up in our final hour, well, look who we have here. Some shows save the big guns for Friday, not us. We're bringing in our good friend Chris Mack to talk Bengals Steelers, maybe some Penn State talk as well. We'll have our own preview of tonight's Thursday Night Football game in 20 minutes, and the Donkster is along at 8:40. Also, welcome to our audience on Stadium as we stream our final hour. We're doing that on X as well. If you want to stream yourself, easy to do. Just go to ValleySportsLive.com or download the Bally Sports Live app. It's been too long since we talked to our next guest. Here he is. Host of the Caboli and Mac podcast. You can see him on the BetMGM network as well. It is our good friend, Chris Mack. Come on, look at this.
Oh.
Single guy. Oh, two people. There he is. Chris,
hello,
how you
friend.
Doing?
A couple claps.
Quick question. Yeah, we got a couple claps in there. Are you aware, as someone who has kids who are right in the middle of this, of the whole 6'7 thing? That
I,
is
yeah,
really...
You have I have make. A 12-and-a-half-year-old son
there we
who's
go.
In seventh grade.
Yes,
every,
okay.
Every opportunity, especially in the midst of math homework,
is an
opportunity to bring up 6'7", which, you know, I was really shocked that the Steelers-Bengals line would just sit at 5.5 the way it has all week. I thought it would get to 6'7".
There it is.
I knew
there
that
is.
Was coming.
Yes.
Boo!
Oh, yeah. Get it in there. Loved it. I saw it, and I was like, bring it. Bring it. Hit me head on with it.
If there's anybody not. Who's like, down for cheesy cultural references, guys, you know on. It's this guy right here.
I just have a problem with it because it has no meaning. Like, at least, like, our generation did, like, oh, 6'9", nice. Like, at least there's a meaning
well,
to that. Like, I
we're
understand
also
it's not
from
great
a generation,
meaning, but...
Chelsea, that strung out the waza for about a year and a half too long.
That's true.
After those commercials.
But that was... That was an actual reference, though, and you would say that as Liza. A greeting to people. Like, you used Liza. It in a logical sense. Like, 6'7 has no context.
Yeah, I don't know what it is with this generation's ability to turn just nonsense into their catchphrases, like skibbity and riz and all that. I don't know.
Oh, God. I don't even want to be alive anymore. God, can we talk
Jesus.
About football?
I guess.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
The Bengals and the Browns, both very Ohio. I mean,
yeah.
Mm.
All right, Chris.
Well, and I was saying this, like, it's the battle of the old guys tonight. Like, it's not going to be a yep. bunch of skibbity-doo and riz between Joe Flacco and Aaron Rodgers, at least. Like, at least we will get none of Gen Z's nonsense tonight.
No.
So a 5.5-point spread. So I think our first question is, 5.5 points, divisional matchup. Does it feel like too much?
No, I think it's just about on target because, in all seriousness, if you do get to the 6-7, seriously,
oh,
I think it's too much in a divisional game, especially a road Thursday night game in the division. I think that does get to be pushing it just a little too much. Now, let's be clear. The Bengals without Burrow are a disaster, and that it doesn't even speak of their defense, and we'll see if Trey Hendrickson's actually able to play tonight, even if he is. He's the only player of import on that side of the ball, really. And the Steelers' offense, for what it's worth, has started to find a little bit of an identity, right? So I think what you're seeing from them is a willingness under Arthur Smith to kind of lean into your typical Arthur Smith game plan, which may not be very sexy and exciting, but you're going to get multiple tight ends. You're going to get that jumbo sixth offensive lineman package that they've used pretty effectively the last two games. And so they're going to commit to using those players. Darnell Washington, who we've been talking about here in Pittsburgh for a couple of years, the giant tight end they drafted out of Georgia a couple of years ago, has been has really started to come into his own, and they're showing an ability and a willingness to use him even more so than Pat Freiermuth or Jonnu Smith. So if you're looking for an anytime touchdown, Darnell would not be a bad look. I really think the Steelers offense is starting to lean into that identity of, okay, and they would never phrase it this way, but let's not ask Aaron to do too much. Let's not put the whole game on his shoulders. That term game manager is a pejorative. We know that in the modern day NFL, but that's all they need Rodgers to be. The intelligent 40-year-old quarterback who walks out there, has seen everything, knows how to react to it, and actually has some protection in front of him to do what he wants to do, which they've improved upon in the last few games as well.
Chris, Steelers are 4-1, but how good is Pittsburgh really? I don't mean that to sound derisive, but you know, I think that record based on the weakness of the division might be a little bit of a misnomer.
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, Jenks. And I think the two top teams that weren't expected to be at the top of the AFC this early in the year, the Colts and the Steelers, are going to have a lot of questions answered about them in the next few weeks, including when they meet each other in a couple of weeks here. I think we're going to learn if these teams are for real or if they've just padded their records early on by doing what they need to do and playing bad teams who don't know how to do what they need to do or can't do what they need to do. You look at Indy's schedule over the next couple of weeks. Obviously, they've got the Chargers this weekend. Probably a test for the Chargers as well, right, given all the offensive line injuries. And then once they host Tennessee, they come to Pittsburgh. They've got Atlanta over in Germany, and after the bye week, they get KC, Houston, Jacksonville, Seattle, San Francisco. So we're going to learn a lot about Indy over the next month to 6 weeks. Same goes for the Steelers, because after this Cincy game, they host Green Bay in prime time. They get the Colts. They get the Chargers. They've still got the Bills and what by then may be a healthy Ravens squad on the schedule twice in the back third of the season. So I think it's a fair question to ask. I think what we've seen from the Steelers is, like I said, a willingness to start to find that Arthur Smith kind of identity on offense. And on defense, they're doing what you expect from a Steelers defense. They're taking down the opposing quarterback. They're forcing turnovers. It saved a game for them in New England earlier this year. So don't ask the quarterback to do too much. Lean on your tight ends on the offensive side. And let's not forget they still have DK Metcalf available to them. And then on defense, just let TJ Watt and Cam Hayward and Jalen Ramsey make plays. Ramsey had 2 sacks last week. They're moving him all over the field. They're starting to get, which was not really a hallmark of Mike Tomlin-led defenses since Dick LeBeau was pushed out of town a while back. They hadn't relied on a lot of creative pressures to get to the quarterback. They've gotten more creative in the last couple of weeks, as we saw with Jalen Ramsey coming off the slot to blitz. Nick Herbig, who is their third edge behind Watt and Alex Highsmith, they put him on the field at the same time as Watt and Highsmith a couple times since Highsmith came back last week. So they're getting more creative on that side of the ball. And that, especially whether you're talking about a rookie quarterback like they faced last week in Dylan Gabriel on the Browns, or I think an older, less mobile quarterback like Flacco tonight can create some chaos for the opposing offense.
All right, so Mama wants a same-game parlay. So can you help me build some legs of this? Like, what are some good props? Like, normally you see a total of 43.5. You're like, uh-oh, maybe not a great game for props. But I do think there are some guys that are maybe worth considering. Like, I was looking at DK Metcalf. It feels very obvious because he's had back-to-back great games. But, like, what are some legs that we should throw in our same-game parlays?
I think if there's a DK prop that you like, I wouldn't hesitate for a second to put that in there. Rodgers, he's become Rodgers' go-to guy. They've had a good chemistry really since the start of training camp. A couple of the throws that you saw to DK against Cleveland were the same exact things we saw them working on way back in training camp at St. Vincent College back in July and August. So they've found a rhythm there. Rodgers knows he can go to him. Rodgers missed him once on a deep ball. Or I guess you could argue maybe Metcalf didn't work back to it the way he should have, but they had an opportunity for one of those against Cleveland as well. And this isn't a Bengals secondary that's going to light your hair on fire. It's not really going to inspire you. So DK is a look. I mentioned Darnell Washington for an anytime touchdown. Mm-hmm. I would take a look at his props as well. And I wouldn't have a problem with the under in this game. I mean, again, we're talking about a Steelers defense against a 40-something-year-old Joe Flacco. They do have all of their corners healthy and available, Pittsburgh. Joey Porter Jr., I mentioned Ramsey, Darius Slay. The one thing to keep an eye on, I don't know if it'll be as much of an effect against a Bengals offense whose tight ends are a bit beat up right now, but Deshaun Elliott did not make the trip to Cincinnati. It's a non-injury related reason, so we may get a Chris Jones situation where whatever the personal issue that gets worked out, he runs onto the field for introductions after getting to the stadium 15 minutes before game time. I don't know about that, but Elliott has been, when he was out, the defense really struggled, and since he's come back, he's been the key to unlocking a lot of big plays in that secondary. So I would keep an eye on that. But if you're looking for a Steelers same-game parlay, Metcalf is a good look. Darnell Washington is a good look. And despite all that, I'd still lean under, especially that we've got a number approaching the mid-40s.
Chris, I wanted to ask you about Penn State.
Huh. So do you have to, Jenks?
I don't, but... You know, if we can talk 6-7, we can talk Penn State.
Yeah.
So,
both James equally Franklin, atrocious right both, now. The 6-7 yes, me and Penn State football.
So, why couldn't James Franklin win big games? Does he just not have it in him? And who is the next head coach in Happy Valley?
I think it was just a matter of James Franklin is a very good program builder. We know what he did at Vandy years ago, right? And I think he did a similar thing at Penn State. He really did build the program back to national prominence. Bill O'Brien gets a ton of credit for keeping it afloat. James Franklin built it back to national prominence. And a lot of us in the Penn State fan base, I think, have been sure to make that point over the last 5 days. He gets credit for that. He does. But he was never going to be the guy who took that final ascent to the peak, right? Mm-hmm. He's proven that with the record against top 10 teams and in big games. I don't know why he could never get that response from his players or why he froze in those moments. That's something for him to figure out at his next stop, which hopefully comes sooner rather than later so it lessens the buyout. But I think, you know, look, the initial reaction is there a way to poach Kurt Cignetti from Indiana? That's been brought up not just because Kurt Cignetti has done an amazing job at Indiana, not just because it's a Big Ten school, but because Kurt's from Western PA. He gets the football ethos of Western PA, and I think you offer a guy from Western PA a boatload of money to coach at Penn State, it's going to be very enticing. So the one problem with that is I've talked to some Penn State insiders is, he's 64. He's a great coach. He's done a fantastic job, but how long is he going to be around for this gig? You know, this is still something they want to be a long-term solution, which is why Matt Rhule's name comes into the conversation. He's from State College. He went to Penn State. He's got a great relationship with the AD. Pat Kraft is literally one of Matt Rhule's best friends. The question there is, do you want to go back and bleep where you eat? In other words, Matt Rhule can go back to State College. He can go back home any weekend in the offseason, get slaps on the back, and everybody's like, hey, you're doing a great job, man. Be awesome if you were here. And everybody thinks about what would it be like if Matt were here in State College and coaching Penn State. What happens if he goes back and it doesn't go well? I think every head coach thinks that they can solve all the problems for any program. They don't really focus on that part, but it's got to be in the back of his mind. What if I go back home and it doesn't go well? What's that going to be like when I go back for the holidays or in the off season? Am I still going to get that warm kind of welcome if I'm at Penn State for 3 years and things tank?
Yeah. That's a good point. Going to be fascinating to watch. Who are they going to bring in? And I did not realize that Cignetti had ties to Pennsylvania as well. So that's something to watch. You can check him out as host of the Caboli and Mac podcast, host on the BetMGM Network. Check him out on Y108 in Pittsburgh as well. And when it comes to Generation Alpha, this guy knows all of the terms. It is Chris Mack.
Skibbity Rins. So Chelsea loves it.
Thank you, buddy.
Speaking of age, let me ask you this, Jenks.
Oh, God.
Do you think 64 is too old to start, like, at a program? Like, I hadn't even thought of this. Like, 64 and the way that Kurt Cignetti, like, carries himself.
Yeah.
He doesn't feel like an old guy to me. Like,
no.
I feel like now in today's day and age, like, if you take care of yourself, you can definitely last longer. But, like, I think it would still be worth it. Like, even if you get 5 years from him,
Absolutely.
Like, I don't know.
No, even if it's just getting the program on the right track. Like, Nick Saban is 73. He retired a couple seasons ago. He did it as good as you can do it late into his career. Pete Carroll's in the NFL. So, yeah, I don't think it's too old at all. Coming up next here on the show, we know what Chris Mack thinks. Now find out which side, maybe a prop that's getting our money tonight in Cincinnati. Our Thursday Night Football preview is next on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is a Thursday. I'm getting excited. The weekend's almost here. Welcome back. I'm Michael Jenkins. My partner in crime is the great Chelsea Messenger. Coming up on the show, Joe Flacco rides again for the Bengals. Chelsea, I feel like a proud father today. Because, yes, I'm very proud. So, I mentioned this before, but back in the day when I was covering the Caps, I became friends with a lot of the fans, which was a really wonderful time because my job was just to go out to walk around the arena, do fan stories, go to bars, talk to fans. And so I got to know many Caps fans very well, where they are to this day, good friends of mine. Lindsay and Tyler, I married them at a local brewery here in D.C. I officiated their wedding. Massive Capitals fans, and they reached out to me about a month ago. Live in West Virginia now. They're like, hey, grab Catherine, come on out and see us. Laura and Aaron, Laura in particular, another good friend of mine, close friend of mine. So I got to know Laura, and Laura is crazy. But her and her husband, Aaron, great couple, and they lived here in D.C. but moved to Austin. And one thing I love about Laura is Laura is, as crazy as she is, has a real knack for talking journalism. Like, she just kind of understands it. So we would sit and just talk shop. Like, this is why this show works. This is what I like about the production, what I don't. This is why this person is better suited to do this role than this. And really fascinating to me. I say that because she's been dying to go back to school, to go to graduate school. She went to KU. But wants to go back to graduate school to continue journalistic studies. So in Austin, she's like, I want to be a Longhorn. I want to be a Longhorn. Can you help me? I was like, yeah, I'll try. So I wrote a letter, and she applied. She got denied, and she was crushed. But she didn't give up. So she hired an advisor to help with her application, and then I wrote another letter, like the best recommendation letter ever, and she reapplied and sort of adjusted her application. She got in yesterday. So I get this text like, oh, my God, I'm crying. I'm so excited. I'm a Longhorn now. I want you to be proud. I'm like, well, of course I'm proud. Like, you did this. I didn't do any of this. But it's really awesome to see someone who is passionate about something get denied and say, I'm not done yet. I'm going to keep trying. And it worked out. So I'm really happy for her. And I got another horn who's a friend of mine. So that's always a good thing.
Serious question, because I'm genuinely interested to hear your answer on this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, like, higher level journalism schools, do you think those matter as much now as they used to? Like, I go back and forth on this because I do think if you are doing like big J journalism, where you are investigating things, you're a political reporter, something like that, I think you probably do need to go that route.
Yes.
But it just feels like so many journalism jobs and journalism jobs these days.
Yeah.
It just feels like repetition and like just doing the job is like better experience. Mm-hmm. Do you get the conundrum that like I'm feeling here?
Well, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think what you're trying to say is the big J journalism doesn't have the impact that it used to have, right? Like
yes.
If you want to be in the business, you don't necessarily have to have that education that was once a prerequisite. So I agree with you. What I would say is I agree. I also think because true journalism has eroded, studying the craft and learning it and doing it the right way has become more important than ever, especially with the freedom of the press under attack in many ways. So I feel like, no, if you want a career, you don't necessarily need that education, but that education is massively important in upholding these journalistic institutions that are increasingly, you know, under fire. So I think in that respect, it's super important.
I think it's just tough for me to like argue that case because like I didn't go to journalism school. Right. I didn't even study journalism in college. Like I started writing for the school newspaper and like I got my experience that way. It's just, I will say this about life in general, that it always feels like there's more than one path to like success. Like there's no one set road. And I feel like, especially now more than ever with people who don't even go to college. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting discussion. And I'm sure people are like, Chelsea, we have a football game tonight. Get to the props.
Well, here's an interesting discussion. Steelers and Bengals, let's get to, I'll be very proud if our bet's hit tonight. How about that? So, the Steelers are laying 5.5. The Steelers are -250. The Bengals are 2-1 on the money line. Your total set at 44. It's gone up a tick. Was it 43 and a hook yesterday? Now, up a half point, even though I like the under in this game. Okay, now it's back down to 43.5. So, we're seeing it kind of go back and forth, back and forth. Chelsea, can you make a case for a side in this game?
Ah, man. You said sides, and immediately I was like, oh, baked potatoes?
Ooh,
so, a side macaroni? In this game. So, divisional matchup, 5.5 points, especially in an AFC North matchup. So, like, normally the template is, okay, we need to at least consider the underdog for a hot minute because usually it's a solid play. But the Bengals do not look like a team that I'd want to back right now. I will say this, when a total is set at, looks like it's gone to 44 over BetMGM, I know it's waffling back and forth, but still, relatively speaking, a low total. It just feels like a game where like the Steelers aren't going to like put their foot on the gas pedal. Like I do think the Steelers are a very good team, and if there's ever a bad matchup, you know, for the Bengals and this Bengals secondary, it's what Aaron Rodgers can do with DK Metcalf. He has had massive games over the last two. But 5.5, it still feels like a big spread to me. So you look across the NFL, like I was just saying this about like the Patriots and Saints game last week, where the Patriots only won that game by 6 points. So it just, I think you need to remember that mindset of the NFL and the parity that we see across the league. And the fact that Joe Flacco is at least a veteran, it does not make me feel great that he's playing behind that offensive line and he's 40 years old. But if somebody's crafty enough to maybe get something going and like have a backdoor cover, it does feel like it's Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I feel like that he, you know, he definitely sort of found his footing last week against the Packers and in the second half. So he came out and on that first drive of the second half was 8 out of 10, looked really good. And you never know with Joe Flacco, right? Because he is older now. He's certainly past his prime, but he is a quarterback who has enough veteran experience and enough success over the years against the Steelers to make something happen here, or at the very least, keep the Bengals close. So all time in his career against the Steelers, he's thrown 27 touchdowns, 12 picks. Historically, he has done well against Pittsburgh. But ultimately, when you're talking about a home game and a divisional battle, the Steelers might be 4-1. But I just think it's a little bit misleading. They're a good team, but they're essentially an above-average team. And at this point in the season, sometimes we see lines swing one way or the other based on recent results. And I just kind of have that gut feeling like, yeah, the Steelers initially look like the right side because the Bengals are so bad. But also, a division game at night, short week, Thursday night football with a quarterback who can keep it close potentially. I'm going to go with the Bengals here.
But I will say this. I tried to make the case for the Browns against the Steelers because same situation. You say, okay, divisional matchup. The Browns at least have a good defense. And the Steelers won that game 23-9. The Browns did not cover whatever that number was. I think it was like 5 or 6 or something like that. But I do think this may be trends to a lower scoring game. And I think you were kind of hinting that as well.
Yeah.
So you do get a 44, at least at BetMGM Tennessee right now. So if you don't really believe in this Bengals offense and this offensive line, I think that's the main thing. I think you go towards the under here, especially with the Steelers. I feel like when it's a divisional matchup and when it's a short week, you are simply just trying to win the game. Like you're not going for style points here. You're simply trying to survive with a dub. So I just feel like the Steelers win, but I don't see them keeping the foot on the gas pedal.
Do you like an under then? I like an under in this game.
I don't want to play it. Like, who wants to sweat out an under? Because here's the sabotage factor for the under. The Steelers are winning comfortably. And they do have a good matchup through the air against this Bengals secondary. And we've seen the Bengals able to put up points in garbage time, like we saw last week against the Packers. And the Packers have a good defense, at least on paper. So, like, that would be the sabotage factor, is if this game gets out of hand and, you know, the defense doesn't, you know, play it super intense in the second half. So last week's score, Packers-Bengals, was 27-18. So by my middle school math, that would be over this total. I think a lot of it depends on how much you believe in the Steelers' offense, because this should be a good matchup for them. Like, Aaron Rodgers has looked good in spurts. I don't know. I feel like there are sabotage factors for both ways.
I think that the Steelers can be explosive, but ultimately they're a little bit misleading in that they actually rank near the bottom of the NFL in yards per play. So, yeah, from time to time they can open it up, but on the whole, they don't average a whole lot of yards per play, and this Bengals defense isn't great. They do get Shamar Stewart back. I think that should help. And also, I think there's a real desperation factor that's at play tonight, and maybe this is more a handicap that you put in if you're looking at the Bengals getting points. But if the Bengals have any hope, and I mean any hope, of making the postseason, they gotta win. Like, it's already kind of on the fritz, right? They're kind of already right there. But if they have any hope of maybe getting Joey Burrow back in time and eking into the playoffs, they gotta get this win. Like, I think it's just going to be all hands on deck. Whatever they have to do to get a win, they're going to do it. And so that makes me like the Bengals plus the points. And also, the way for them to get a victory is to ground and pound. That's their best way to get a win, is to grind it out against this Steelers defense and make it an ugly game. And also, you know, when we talk about analytics versus gut, whenever I see an AFC North matchup in prime time, and I look at the number, and I get it in the 40s, it just feels like an under game.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes when I'm stuck on a total, sometimes you can look at pace of play. And I was looking at this, and the Steelers and the Bengals are both towards the bottom of the league when it comes to plays per game. So, like, both these teams are not playing at quick paces. Like, Pittsburgh ranks 30th. Cincinnati ranks 29th. Because that goes into it as well. Even if you're an explosive offense, you know, if you play at a slow pace, sometimes, you know, that can be the difference between winning or losing a total bet. So I think that kind of screams under to me, especially on a short week. Like, don't get cute with it. But as far as props go, like I've mentioned this before, I think the selection for me, the prop player of the week, is going to be DK Metcalf. Feels like he has a great matchup here, as the Bengals are giving up, I think, the sixth most receiving yards to opposing wide receivers. This is not a good secondary. They also give up a ton of points. And also, it feels like Aaron Rodgers and DK Metcalf are starting to really develop that connection that I think a lot of us thought was going to happen right off the bat, just because DK Metcalf was one of the first receivers to work out with Aaron Rodgers. So over the last 2 weeks, had five catches for 126 yards against the Vikings, had four catches for 95 yards against the Browns last week. So his prop has gone up. It was 60.5, now it's 64.5. Makes me a little nervous in that regard, but I still think the targets are there enough. Like, he had 9 targets last week. Like, that's a good sign, because you don't want to rely too heavily on the big play, because that game where he had 126 yards, he had an 80-yard catch. So obviously that kind of skews the math a little bit, but he is so physical and he is so tough to cover that I do think Aaron Rodgers at least gives him a few chances for one of those big explosive plays. So I think 64.5 is still a very gettable number for one of the most physically freak athletes in the NFL.
Yeah, he is unreal. I'm looking at this Chase Brown prop, and I just can't pull the trigger. I don't think I can do it. I'm trying to follow game script here. Chase Brown's rushing prop is 43.5. It's a little higher than it should be, and I kind of feel like it's still the right side. He hasn't hit this since week 2 against the Jags, but what is the difference between that game and every other game that the Bengals have played this season? It's that the Bengals have been playing from behind. They've been playing catch-up. So when that's the case, what do you have to do? You have to throw the ball, whether it's Jake Browning or Joe Flacco. But in this game, if you believe it's going to be close, and I think it's going to be close, that means the Bengals are going to want to grind out this game on the ground and feed Chase Brown as opposed to trying to throw down the field constantly to keep up with a team that has a big lead on them. And I think this is going to be close. So Chase Brown's yardage total again on the ground is 43.5, and they won that game against the Jags the last time he hit that number. I don't necessarily think Cincinnati is a live dog tonight, but I do think because I expect this game to be close, I expect Cincy to hand it off as opposed to saying, hey, let's put this game in the hands of Joe Flacco. They don't want to do that.
I just get nervous with Chase Brown because it does not feel like he has big upside. Like, his highest rushing total this year has been 47. And especially in the last four games, he has not gotten more than 10 carries. And I understand what you're saying with the game script. Maybe this one's better, but I still think the Steelers win this game. So I don't even know if this is going to be a positive game script this week. And also, Samaje Perine has been getting touches as well. He had 8 touches last time. So I'm not a huge fan of taking running backs that have a target share in the backfield. But if you like it, play it.
No, I'm not going to play it. I'm just looking at it. Not a big fan of this game.
JK.
Okay, coming up next on the show. We had one baseball game on the schedule yesterday. Tonight we've got 2 and Thursday Night Football. So where are we putting our money? Coming up next on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. I'm Michael Jenkins. She's Chelsea Messenger. Thanks for being with us. We're streaming on Stadium as we speak. Also, streaming on X right now. So if you're watching us, hey, how you doing? Thanks for being with us. Coming up, Bet Sweats, the Donkster, our best bets. Chelsea, what is going on with you today? Is it Crockpot Thursday? As soon as you get done, it's time to start loading things up and getting ready to feed the fam? What's going on?
Yeah, it's Croctober.
Croctober.
Get the name right. Yeah, the marketing here in the household is Croctober. So in October, we make a ton of Crock-Pot meals. And today it's that chicken pot pie soup that I had mentioned. Mm-hmm. But right after this, I have to get Blake ready for school. It is a mad dash. Like the next 15 minutes after the show where it's like, please brush your teeth. Please go to the bathroom. Please agree on this outfit. Because like Blake wants to pick out her outfit every day from school, for school. And it never matches. And like, here's the thing. I look like a bad parent if she goes to school in mismatched clothes that are also too small for her. Like, she has these outfits that she really likes, and she likes them for a long time. So it's like 3T or something. And like, Blake is very tall and she's 5. She wears 6T now, or like 6X, whatever. So like, she comes in with like this belly shirt and these high water pants. She's like, I've got my outfit ready. Like, no, we are not going to school dressed like that.
I would love to see this. That's funny. Kids are funny like that. They'll just take what they want, and they'll say, I'm going to wear this, and I think it looks great. Are there kids at her school who do that, though? Like, clearly the parents are like, I just let this kid dress himself or dress herself.
I think you see it from time to time. I've not seen it at school, but at the Y, there are so many girls that wear pajamas to the Y. And so Blake is like, well, she gets to wear a nightgown. I'm like, well, we're not going to do that. Like, because I feel like that's like, I don't know. What I remember of like the trashy families growing up is like the people who wear pajama pants to Walmart. You know exactly the type of people I'm talking about. So yeah. I, in my core memories, do not want my family to look like that.
What's the old line from Jerry Seinfeld back in the day on Seinfeld? He was like, I think sweats pretty much say, I give up, which I kind of love. Like, nah, I'm done here. I'm just putting on the sweats today. But sometimes there is a place for that. There's always a place for bet sweats in our life. Bet sweats. Joe O. Sammy P. Bet sweats. Our guys giving out their favorite plays for Thursday Night Football. They're going to hand out their Survivor plays as well. And some great guests, as they usually have. Andy Molitor from BetSports joins at 10 o'clock. And then John Murray from the Westgate Superbook will be along at 11:20. Guess what I'm going to do today?
What?
I'm going to chase because I've had a bad week.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. You've got 3 bets. I've got 4 bets. So let's get to it.
Time to place your bets.
Card. That's what I'm talking about. Croctober activate.
Hell yeah. It'll be ready in 4 to 6 hours. Unlike my best bet that's ready now. Dang. All right, best bet of the night is going to be DK Metcalf of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Going to go 60-plus receiving yards for minus 125. We're dumbing it down a little bit because I have lost several bets by like a mere yard or yard and a half. But DK Metcalf obviously has extreme upside in this matchup. If you look at the Bengals on paper, they have given up the 6th most receiving yards to opposing wide receivers. That secondary is not great. Meanwhile, we see DK Metcalf and Aaron Rodgers continue to establish a great connection that we all expected from the jump, because DK Metcalf was the guy working out with Aaron Rodgers even before he officially signed with the Steelers. So back-to-back games with huge outputs. Against the Vikings, he had 5 catches for 126 yards. Last game, he had 9 targets, 4 catches, and 95 yards. So that's the main thing. I like that the targets are progressively going up, and it's a good matchup. Why would you not use one of the best physically in shape athletes in the NFL? Almost feels like you're watching like a basketball player out there. So I think DK Metcalf is going to continue to get the targets tonight against a Bengals weak secondary. Let's go 60 plus receiving yards for DK.
Okay, let's do this. I'm starting with Brewers and the Dodgers here. So I'm going to go Dodgers -1. God. -150. Or play this on the run line. Get yourself some plus money. Look, Tyler Glass now is going for the Dodgers. And I just think this is such a bad spot for the Brewers. This starting pitching for LA has just eaten them alive. Blake Snell goes into the 8th. Yoshi Yamamoto pitches a 3-hit complete game. And now it's Tyler Glass now. Just no let up from that Dodgers starting rotation. Last time out for Tyler Glass now. Pitched against the Phillies. In LA, 6 shutout innings. He's 3-2 at home this season with a 2.77 ERA. This is essentially a bullpen game for the Brewers. They'll probably go with Jose Quintana at some point. They just don't have the rotation that LA has. Dodgers could get the sweep here. Take the Dodgers on the run line. Get yourself some plus money. I'm going to go Dodgers -1, -150.
Yeah, we're both being cowards with this one.
I know.
Instead of playing the totally. Run line, I'm gonna do this. I'm going to do Dodgers team total over 3.5 plus the money line. They're obviously correlated bets because one would think if the Dodgers, you know, are scoring a lot of runs, probably going to win the game. So 3.5 feels like a gettable number for this Dodgers offense that feels like it hasn't even hit their peak, because Shohei Ohtani has been very pedestrian. Dare I say he has been very bad in the postseason thus far. So for all the reasons you mentioned about the Dodgers on the money line, their bullpen is absolutely fresh. The Brewers have a bullpen game against this Dodgers lineup that's been tested and true in the postseason, it feels like, for like 17 years in a row. So that feels like a play for me. Over 3.5 runs, and the money line is -125 for that one. Then we're going to go Blue Jays Mariners over 7.5. We saw the hit parade last night, courtesy of the Blue Jays. And maybe it's not the Blue Jays tonight, but I think both these teams are fully capable of mashing some home runs, even when it's a pitcher-friendly park. Like, we saw this last night. Some of the home runs were, you know, 415, 437, courtesy of both bats on each side. So I think the hit parade continues, especially as we get later on in these series where we see the same bullpen guys going. And plus, Max Scherzer is going for the Blue Jays. I don't know if he's going to be bad, but I think he's at least going to give up a couple. Like, because that's the sabotage factor. When a total is 7.5, you just need both pitchers to not be dominant. And I just don't think it's going to be the case for Luis Castillo either, because in both starts against the Blue Jays earlier this season. He gave up a lot of hard contact. Gave up 10 hits in his first outing against the Blue Jays and then 5 runs in the next one. So I think we see several runs in this one over the total. 7.5 feels too low. Let's go over in that one.
I'm with you here. I'm going to go first 5 over 3.5. It's minus 145 now, so I will take that. I want to trust Max Scherzer. We love Mad Max here in D.C., the ultimate competitor. But he is 41 years old, and he's given up at least 4 runs in 5 of his last 6 appearances. And then you mentioned Castillo, who has been hit pretty hard by the Blue Jays twice this season, 8 runs over 8 innings. So with the way we saw the Blue Jays bats come alive last night, and they already hit Castillo well, and Max Scherzer has struggled this season, I feel like this is definitely an over game. I'm going to play first 5 over, but I like your play as well. How about some Thursday night football? Let's do it. Bengals. Oh, yeah. Bengals plus 5.5 hosting the Steelers. Oh, man. Do you know how difficult it is to grab points with the Bengals with a bad football team? But I feel like the Steelers are maybe a little overvalued here. Best win of the season came against the Patriots. Okay, early in the season, Patriots are a good team. But then they beat the Vikings with Carson Wentz at quarterback. Pittsburgh is just a little overvalued because that division is so bad right now. And the Bengals are one of the reasons for that. But ultimately, if you look at Cincinnati, this is a team that has to have this win if they have any hope at all of making the playoffs and getting Joe Burrow back in time to help them make some sort of run. Probably not going to happen, but they have to have this. And ultimately, when you see a game in the AFC North, 5.5 points is just a lot of points. The Bengals are at home. It's a short week. And if you look at the Steelers' offense, they actually rank near the bottom of the NFL in yards per play. I think this is a grinded-out game for the Bengals. They keep it within the number. And also, all-time against the Steelers, Joe Flacco, 27 touchdowns, 12 picks. I know this is not the Joe Flacco of old, who is a former Super Bowl MVP, but he's had historically a lot of success here. So give me the Bengals plus 5.5. One hockey play for you. Devils on the money line, minus 152, hosting the Panthers. Good spot for the Devils. This is their home opener, and the Panthers are going to be tired. They're playing on the back end of a back-to-back, 3 games in 4 nights. Also, the Panthers are super banged up right now. Alexander Barkov out, Matthew Tkachuk out until December, and now Dmitry Kulikov out for the next 5 months. He's having surgery on his labrum. I like the Devils tonight at home on the money line. Before we get to Joe O, we got to bring in the Dogster. Good morning, Dogster. What's happening?
What do you guys think Sammy P smells like?
I don't know. I'm sure he smells great.
He's winning bets and he's got that baby face the ladies love. I bet he smells like cedarwood and money.
Okay.
So I'm going to follow in his footsteps with my own special cologne.
Well, what's it called?
Redonkulous, for the animal in all of us.
Oh, God, okay. You have a bet, Dogster?
Steelers, minus 55 against the Bengals.
No.
Oh,
it's not right.
Alt-line.
Well, you're going to make a lot of money tonight, Dogster. Good luck. Joe, oh, good morning. How are you?
Smells like alcohol, to answer the Dunkster's question.
Oh, well. What's his drink of choice? Isn't it Jameson?
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah, that's what he always drinks.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yes.
Yes, that too.
All right.
Yes. Whatever you would have said, you, yes, is the answer.
I don't know. Are you taking the alt line of Steelers minus 55? 55.
I'm not.
What do you think happens in this game?
So we've had the last couple Thursdays have been kind of crazy, right? With upsets. We had the Giants, and then we had the Rams, too. I liked what I saw out of Flacco in the second half.
There we go.
It's hard to trust the Bengals' defense, but I think they hang around. I think he found something with Chase there.
Oh, God, I love that. That's what I'm talking about, Joe. Always a pleasure. Have a great show. We're out of time here on the Daily Tip on the BetMGM Network. For our fantastic crew, I'm Michael Jenkins. Have a great Thursday.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.